Hi guys, so I have an incredible episode for you guys tonight. That's right, it's your humble host, Isabella L. Price, coming at you for Nocturnal Emissions Radio. Okay, the first of its kind. I have a spiritual healer, a necromancer, a brujerio. This is such a treat for you guys. What had happened was that I was looking online and I was looking at different events that were happening around Seattle, and I stumbled upon this person and sent them an email being like, I'd love to ask you some questions. And they said yes, which is crazy because I'm a nobody. But anyway, they were so generous enough and kind enough to answer my questions and to talk a little bit about what they do and talk about some spiritual practices. This is the first person that I've had on the show to talk about spirituality, and I'm hoping to have them back on the show. So if you like this, please hit that subscribe button. If you want to help us with the show, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/nocturnalemissionsshow, that helps us offset some of the costs that it takes to do all of these things. You can catch us on Twitter at NOCEMISS, on Facebook, Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, Snapchat, your dad's DMs. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not on any of that stuff. Actually, no, I am on Instagram. Anyway, without further ado, I really want to introduce my guest, Roman Delgado.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me here at Nocturnal Emissions Radio. I am your humble host, Isabella L. Price, and I've got a special guest with me here today. I am so, so, so excited for this guest. This is actually the first guest that I have like this, so I'm really, really excited for you guys. My guest, please introduce yourself.
My name is Roman Delgado. I am a conjure man. I am a brujo, a shamanic practitioner, a necromancer, a medium, and a spiritual healer.
Wow, that's incredible. That is so incredible. I really wanted to ask you, for all of those things that you do, how did you get into this? What is your story? How did you discover that you had these abilities?
Well, that is quite a bit of a story, actually.
Please.
I was born in San Jose, California. But when I was a small little baby, my mother took me to live with her and her family in a town called Tepic in the west coast of Mexico. And all of my mother's family are practitioners of brujería. Mm-hmm. And when I was a small child, I started exhibiting signs that I could speak and see the dead. And when those began to get me into trouble, and I did get into plenty of trouble because of those, for doing inappropriate things, my grandmother started teaching me how to control my gifts. And she began to teach me how to tend to the ancestral altar and how to do graveyard work and how to communicate with the dead and how to pray and how to do all those things that are the building blocks of brujería and conjure.
And so your family, what is your family's like nationality or ethnicity?
My family's, my mother's side of the family anyway, we are a combination of Native Mexican, Spanish, and Spanish Gypsy.
Oh, wow. Wow. So has this like always been in your life? Have you always grown up around these kinds of things?
Well, for me, it was a big time when I was very young because my grandmother was the matriarch of the clan. Everything that was spiritual about my family came from her. When my grandmother passed away, my family fell apart, and a lot of those teachings began to get lost in the younger generations like me. So I kind of had a break from when I was about 8 years old until when I was 15, that for me, those teachings were not present because there was nobody left to teach me. When I came into the United States to live with my father again and come back to my father's family, where I was born in San Jose, I began to investigate other forms of magic and religion. I studied everything from Wicca and British witchcraft to chaos magic, darker forms of magic like Satanism and Luciferian religions. I studied chaos magic and shamanism and Reiki and massage and everything I could get my hands off to kind of figure out how to find my own place again, my space and my spirituality, which through the practice of shamanic healing looped me back into Southern Conjure, which is a lot like brujería, but American. I call them cousin practices because they have so much in common.
Yeah, my family has a lot of, my family is originally from Louisiana and Mississippi, mm-hmm. And we have a lot of background in that, conjure magic as well, so that's really interesting. So when you studied Western magic, though, how was that journey? I mean, Western magic has really gone through a lot of different kinds of practices, combining from different cultures, taking from different cultures. You know, there's a lot of kind of debate about what exactly constitutes different kinds of forms of Western magic. But then coming from your own background, your own ethnicity, how was that for you? Was it difficult to kind of reconcile those things together, or?
Well, the beautiful thing about brujería and curanderismo, which are the two spectrums of Mexican folk magic, is that it is very fluid. The more energy it comes into contact with, the more it absorbs. A real brujo or curandero or curandera, they will not turn away knowledge that is useful for their clients simply because it's not traditional. If it works for them, they will adopt it. To the point in which I have seen the work of very prominent brujos online talking about mixing the energy of ceremonial magic, like speaking about the connections of ceremonial magic and the magic of the tetragrammaton, for example, connecting it to heavy duty magical workings with Santa Muerte. So there is no real line to be crossed, because magic, as Mexican people understand, that is fluid and it can be adapted to the needs of anything. Magic in Mexican culture, much like in conjure in the United States, was born out of an answer to oppression, out of the native Mexican people living in the mines by the Spanish and living and dying in the mines. And when the Spanish occupation left, that level of social injustice that was still in place from racial prejudice against indigenous and people of color, or just people who of little means. It was very similar to conjure because of that. And in those aspects, any tools that can be gained to empower the people in Mexico and in brujería in particular are most of the times welcome, to the point in which if you go to a Mexican botanica anywhere in the United States, you as any conjure person will be able to see a lot of items that you will recognize, but under Spanish names.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting how the two kind of different cultures, you know, you were talking about like Louisiana voodoo culture and how brujería, how so much of that has really parallel kind of backgrounds to each other. You had mentioned your background, is there any area that you consider to be like your specialty, your area of expertise at all?
You know, it's really funny. A lot of my teachers, particularly in my healing modalities, used to tell me that after a while of doing the work, divinity itself, the people who kind of run the show spiritually, will give you a niche, something that you're really, really good at, and that's what people will be coming to you for. And I really didn't want to believe that at first. But in the last 4 or 5 years, when I've been doing some very deep work in shamanic healing, I've been doing a lot of work unraveling curses and unraveling not only black magic, but generational curses, the curses that get passed down. I know in conjure, we call those cross conditions. So using shamanic tools to unravel not only the cross conditions and the curses that we pick up or are sent to us through magic, but also the things that get handed down the generations. And that's been the bulk of my work for the last 4 years or so, that people just keep coming for me over and over and over. And I don't understand why it just keeps showing up.
Yeah. So for the listeners, I wondered if you could go into kind of what a generational curse is and how those things manifest. And then, you know, what kind of way would you approach that kind of issue?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, generational curses have multiple ways in which they get passed down. Okay, a generational curse could be a bad habit. Like, for example, somebody gets hooked on drinking too much alcohol. And it becomes a habit that they cannot break in their lifetime. And their children grow up watching this. And because of that, when they turn to trouble and their life gets really hard, they do what their parents did and they start drinking. And the drinking issues and everything that comes with the disease of alcoholism gets passed down the generations. And it follows a pattern generation after generation after generation after generation. And because of that, it becomes a cross that we carry. It becomes a curse that we carry because it got passed down as a pattern. That is a form of a generational curse. At the same time, there are other forms of generational curses. A good example of that is a literal curse when you encounter a practitioner or some type of magic that throws a spell at you for whatever messed up reason, and it doesn't get resolved, and it gets passed down the generations, it becomes more and more complex as each generation passes on and moves on. Each generation that follows the pattern of the original curse tends to expound on it. Another example of that is when there is an unresolved issue, and this is the most common one of a generational curse. This is, let's say that the individual who the example that I spoke of earlier, in which there's someone who was an alcoholic and they had liver issues because of their alcoholism, but they never wanted to pass on. They never wanted to die because they wanted to keep drinking, and they get stuck in this plane of existence. And ever since, every time they become close to one of their future generations in the living world, they pass on the energy of alcoholism and liver disease. I have clients of mine that every single male in their family had died of heart disease at 25 years of age.
Wow.
For seven generations back. And when doing my work, talking to the dead and doing shamanic journey, I realized that there was an ancestor who began that pattern. And I had to first unravel the etheric web, the spiritual energy that was the connections between the living and the dead. Then I had to cross over the dead, and then I had to release the energy of the illness. And that's a very complex way of doing shamanic healing, but it's the gift that some of my teachers in the spiritual world had given me how to do it. And it's something that it echoes throughout time. And all generations, once the curse is released, become to unravel. It is really like a tidal wave that sweeps across all of creation, releasing the pain from all areas of spirit throughout time.
Wow. So when you're working with families and really deep issues like this, you know, I wonder about how much of it becomes like therapy. I mean, dealing with people's really emotional traumas really is like vulnerable work, you know, and how much of that is like really getting into like just being a therapist and just listening to people's pain and their trauma and their histories and things like that.
Well, the first thing I gotta say, especially to make the disclaimer, is that I am not a therapist. I am not licensed to be a psychotherapist, and I do not claim to be one. And I do not claim to do the work of one. What I do is spiritual healing. I leave the energy of the mind and the emotions to the professionals. When a client comes to me and I realize that they have problems beyond the energetic, beyond the spiritual, something that cannot be fixed simply by lending an ear in one or two sessions, I really do tell them, you know, I know of this community clinic, for example, in Seattle, because I am in Tacoma, that does very good community counseling where you need to get some help. I always tell them, I cannot see you until you come back and you have a counselor, because a lot of the work that I do brings out the energy that needs to be released, that it's beyond just the minor wounds, and they're deep, powerful, visceral wounds that are not only spiritual but emotional, and they need the literal professional help of a therapist to use them. Now, with that in mind, is there a similarity in a small way? Yes. In traditional Mexican curanderismo, there is a field of specialty called, we call ourselves consejeros espirituales, or spiritual advisors. And the biggest major role of a spiritual counselor or a consejero espiritual in curanderismo is to be the person who, by their tools, whether it's doing readings or spiritual healing, or just simply listening and talking and holding space and ritualizing those particular types of things, can bring peace to an unrestful soul. Now, is that something that is counseling as it's known by Western culture? No. We are setting spirits at peace, not minds, not emotions. Our job is to set the soul at peace. And in that aspect, we work in conjunction with Western medicine. I've gone online trying to find other people who do the work that I do, and I become so surprised how many of them are giving lectures in hospitals or to medical students all over the Southwest, especially where the Latino culture is more prevalent. So there is definitely a beginning of building of type of traditional indigenous therapies that are being that are beginning to be woven together with Western medicine, even though it's in its very infancy of a movement, it's beginning to happen.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, if you have a really long history, maybe I'm wrong about this, but you know, please correct me. But you have a really long history of drug abuse or alcoholism, like you said, and Western medicine, it just doesn't seem to be getting you as far towards treatment as you would need, that maybe that's then the time to do some reaching out to somebody like you to see if it's something that's more of like a generational curse or something that is more a spiritual sickness. Would you say that that's kind of when people should reach out to you?
Definitely, yes. Yeah. It's the vast majority of my clients. And it's interesting because the idea of what constitutes, what makes a spiritual illness, what constitutes a spiritual illness, is not set in stone. You know, a lot of people think that they have to have their hair on fire, running and screaming by the time they get to me. But I had people who come to me because they are tired of not having fulfilling relationships, that they have a history of negative relationships. I have clients of mine who have lost their will to move on and to push through the difficulties in their lives, that they're depleted and they need to reconnect with their power, because a lot of these are versions of shamanic illness. You know, in Mexican culture, we do have several different versions of folk illnesses, and in shamanic healing all over the world, there are other forms of illnesses that are purely shamanic that coincide with that. We have things like susto, which is soul loss, espanto, which is a deeper form of soul loss. We have the casamiento, which is the energy when people just seem to waste away for no reason. The energy of people who are constantly at the edge, we call it ataque de nervios, which is nerves, when you are constantly at a fight or flight mode. We have mal de ojo, the evil eye. It's a real thing. I have seen people on the verge of death for it when I was growing up in Mexico. So there is so much that indigenous cultures classify as spiritual illness that is not classified as illness by American or by Western medicine. Some of them have parallels. Soul loss. When I spoke about it in college to my psychology professor, because they were curious about what I grew up with, they said, well, that sounds a lot like illnesses in the dissociative spectrum. If we were to classify it, and I don't think we can, we would try to do it there.
Yeah. So one of the things that you also mentioned was, so you just mentioned going to school and studying, but you also mentioned your teachers as well. And so I wanted to ask about that journey for you. How did you find people to help you get to where you are right now? And how did you learn? How did you study?
Well, my very first teacher was my grandmother. As soon as she started seeing me go through the stages of receiving my spiritual calling and answering to that call, she began to teach me. I would sit as a small boy at her knee learning to pray. Then learning to pray the rosary, and then learning some special prayers that were passed down the generations in my family. She taught me how to tend to our altar where she did her work. She taught me how to connect to the spirits, how to go to the graveyard, because we do a lot of graveyard work in folk magic. I remember going to a grave that had been abandoned since the, I think, 1500s in colonial Mexico at that graveyard. And she would tend to it because the family whose ancestor that was wanted nothing to do with it, because, you know, they didn't even know who it was. So she would tend to it, and she would speak to the spirit, and that particular spirit would help her when things got really, really bad. So I learned a lot from my grandmother when I came to the United States after my military experience, which is how I got into the Pacific Northwest, I connected with the local pagan community, and some of members of the pagan community were the ones who introduced me to Western magic and to Western magical practices. I've studied with conjure people and curanderos and curanderas through distance learning by phone calls and through email work correspondences that are on the South, particularly in Texas and Louisiana. Some of them are very prominent authors in the field of conjure. And I've learned from the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, Michael Harner's organization, may he rest in peace. He's been a huge influence in me because his teachings have allowed me to gain a greater connection with the spiritual world and learn directly from the spirits, which is something that I believe had been lost to me when my grandmother passed away.
Oh, so you got up here now in the Pacific Northwest, and how long have you been up here before?
Since I got here in 2000, I was stationed at JBLM back in the day before it was JBLM, back in it was plain old Fort Lewis.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I remember that. Okay. So you've been up here for a while. What's your impression of the community up here?
I love the community in the Northwest. There's such vibrant energy. There's a little bit of everything in the Pacific Northwest, particularly in the Puget Sound. I mean, there's everything from ceremonial magic to a very vibrant conjure community. There's a very vibrant community. A lot of Vikings, surprisingly enough. a lot of Nordic practitioners. A lot of Wiccan people. A lot of ceremonial magicians. A lot of everything. And the community is very woven, very tightly, and very supportive of each other. And they're very welcoming people. As long as you are willing to open yourself up and go to one of the public rituals that you will find plastered all over the internet, you will be able to find someone who will welcome you. And I think that is beautiful.
That's great. Yeah, it is a lot of it's a lot of Scandinavians. I think a lot of Scandinavians settled here. I think a lot of Swedish and Norwegian people settled up here. So that makes sense to me. Yeah, yeah. Cool. So when are you very public with who you are and what you do, or is this something that you don't really advertise openly? What's your public life?
I don't advertise very much, but I am very public. Things get out through word of mouth. I started doing readings publicly and healing work very intensely. It's been quite a few years. I think it was 2013. I started working at a small shop that is not no longer there. It used to be across the street from the Pike Place Market. It's called Eco Elements. If DJ is listening to me eventually, hi DJ, thank you for giving me that opportunity. She's the one that hired me to do readings there. And from the moment I started reading there, word just started getting out. I mean, at this point, I have clients who have walked into where I work now who handed me my business card. And this says, you know, I'm from New Zealand and somebody came to see you a few years ago when they were in Seattle. And they told me when you go to Seattle, you got to check this guy out. I have clients in New Zealand, Australia, Hong Kong, China, England, all over Latin America, all over the United States. I mean, people know about me and I don't know how that keeps happening. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be out there just screaming up the mountaintops, come see me, because people just do.
That's great, though. That's great. I mean, that must mean that your work is having an impact on people, you know, and so that they want other people to know about you and spread that. So that's incredible. So do you do a lot of work on the internet at all, or has the internet been an asset for you?
The internet has been really good at getting a word out. I don't do distance healing work or distance readings for the fear soul fact that my work is incredibly visceral in nature. It doesn't matter whether I'm doing my shamanic healing or whether I'm doing a reading, whether I am connecting with a dead relative because of my necromancy work, or any of the different type of works that I do, when I'm doing a cleansing or whatever it is that I'm doing, it tends to move people very deeply, both because of the nature of the work and by what you can tell by my demeanor. I'm a very fiery person. I'm very passionate. So me not being able to be there to take accountability for my fire and for the reaction that is bringing out of my clients is, in my personal view, very irresponsible. I want to be able to sit in front of you face to face and hold space for you and be accountable for the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of wondered about how is, because so many people now, this is something that I want to ask you coming up. The internet has had like a huge effect on brujeria, hoodoo, voodoo. It's just, I'm not going to say that it's mainstream now, but it's definitely much more popular than it has been before. And, you know, I've really wondered about how the internet is impacting that. And because our ancestors didn't have the internet, you know, so when they were making these magics, these spells, these rituals, these crafts, they didn't know how the internet was going to impact that. So how do we sort of account for the way that the internet has changed everything? But it sounds like you do it still, I don't want to say old-fashioned, but a traditional sort of a way.
Well, you know, it's funny you say old-fashioned. My my teacher in conjure, her brand is old-style conjure. So I really do my best to stay by that and go through that energy. I found with the newer forms of conjure and brujeria and the folk magic traditions, is that a lot of people who come to this energy through the internet do so in search of power. And it perverts and it twists the energy of the tradition out of shape. I see so many people who come to me asking me to cast a curse on someone because they want their boyfriend, or because they stole their boyfriend, or because they're getting in the way of their work, or because they want their promotion, or they want to get rid of their neighbor, or they want to do something mean for very petty reasons. And it's all in my realization of my own work, circumventing something very visceral about the state of humanity in general. And that is the energy of spiritual and energetic loss. People are walking around wounded, looking for something to fill the void where their sense of self-empowerment used to be, and their very soul pieces used to be. And they're grabbing at conjure and at brujeria and at all these traditions in order to fill the void, to feel powerful again. Because only the truly powerless seek power in order to do harm to others. Mm-hmm. And in that energy, for me, I am not very fond of internet conjure or internet brujeria for the sake of just teaching anybody. I like to gravitate towards teachers who make sure that the people are coming to them with the intent of learning for the knowledge and wisdom and not for the power. Because people who seek power for the sake of power often misuse it.
Yes. Yeah. So have you've noticed this new, it's not new, but certainly within the past few years, I've just seen it everywhere. I mean, like I saw it at, where was it? I think it was either at Sephora or Ulta. One of the makeup companies had like a witchcraft kit. It was like they were selling crystals, they were selling smudge sticks, you know, for like, God, like $50-$60. Like it was crazy, you know, along with some makeup and stuff like that. And that's when I really was like, oh, this is like, it's out there now. Before, it used to be something that was really kind of subculture-y, but now it's, I see crystals everywhere. I see smudge sticks everywhere. I mean, in every store, it's really, really remarkable. And we've got somebody here in Seattle called the Hood Witch, and her blog has really gotten really popular. Have you noticed the same kind of explosion from the internet?
Yes. Definitely. It's gotten to the point in which in my email and on my Facebook account, I often get advertisements for a lot of these things, because my name is out there and my presence is out there in the local community. And I get advertisements for courses and for other things. And, you know, bless their hearts, if they're teaching from the right place, by all means do so. But people need to take accountability for what they're teaching, and people need to take accountability for who they're teaching. And a lot of the energy that is getting put out there, particularly by mass market companies, is simply to make money. And that's not the way the work originally was. Originally, the work was to uphold the community for people who were in a bad space, who were oppressed and sick and lacking, to uphold them so we may have a better life, all of us. And when you take away the energy of folk magic away from that, you are doing disservice to where it comes from.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of insight about why you think that why this has happened in the past few years? I mean, you know, we're in a certain political climate that is not friendly to everybody. And certainly a lot of people have attributed to that, you know, that we are living in times where people feel unsafe and they feel powerless. So they're going and trying to do things that make them feel more powerful, or not powerful, but make them feel like they have control. Do you have any sort of thoughts about why it's become so popular recently?
Oh, definitely. It's been about 10 years since this revelation came to me. And I was taking a class on shamanic healing, and the teacher asked us to do a shamanic journey to exit our bodies through trance work and find a spirit, an animal spirit, to give us guidance for the entire class to share with each other. And what I found was the energy of a serpent. And the serpent came down from a tree and just stared at me hanging from the tree. And it looks at me and just, there's something I need you to pass on to the living world. And the serpent says, the entirety of your society, the human race, is living in a state of societal soul loss. Parts of humanity itself really is, on a spiritual level, is missing. And you are desperate to fill the void and reconnect with your essence and with each other. Look at the technology that is evolving. Your cell phones, your computers, the internet, it's all designed to reconnect you with each other and with something that you're looking for, but what you can find. And I came back and I passed on that message. And for me, I have this idea that what is happening now is a progression of that level of spiritual illness, of losing a part of humanity's soul, and that we're desperately reaching for something to fill the void where the essence of who we are as a species used to be.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels that way. It feels like, you know, technology for me is a tool, just like any other tool, you know, like a knife or a hammer. You can use it to do good, and you can also use it to do harm. It just depends on who you are and how you want to use it. And so for a lot of people, it's a tool to bring people together. I mean, I would have never found you and reached out to you, and we would have never had this conversation had I not had the internet. Well, maybe, you know, but, you know, but some people use it to alienate themselves and never reach out to other people. So I think that's what you just described to me really resonates with me. That sounds exactly like what's going on. So that's really powerful. So I wanted to ask about what are your goals in your work? Like what do you hope to achieve with the work that you do?
Well, one thing that I really, really is my individual goal with every client is to empower them to heal themselves and to take charge of their lives. A lot of people come to me hoping that I would do a spell or a working or a curse or something to fix everything and let their lives be better. But that's not the type of work that I do. I don't do conjure for money. I teach people how to do things from time to time if they're willing. But my primary focus is to begin to make a difference in the world one person at a time, helping each client to be empowered to take the steps that they need to take to heal themselves and empower themselves so they can do the same thing for others. In a different way, given my heritage, I see myself as a bridge, not only between the world of the living, but the world of the spirits. And I see myself as a bridge between many different cultures, between indigenous cultures and Western cultures. So for me, my life is about bridging worlds, whether be it in spiritual forces or whether it's bridging Mexican culture with American culture, or bridging my indigenous culture, my indigenous background with Western magical systems. It doesn't matter. My work is building bridges. And that is what I hope to accomplish in each of my actions. Because a lot of people, when they come to the shop where I work at, they look at the stuff that we sell and they're like happy. Or they look at the section where I have the supplies that I normally use in my work, the candles and the oils and the herbs. And they look at me like, well, what's this? You know, they get a little standoffish. And my goal is to build that bridge and help people understand that we're not all that different, any of us. We're all trying to have a better life for ourselves and everyone we love.
Yeah. So what kind of, I saw that you were working with Spooked in Seattle. Mm-hmm. What kind of work do you do with the public? Do you do events? Do you do public readings?
Well, I work currently, I'm in Tacoma. I work at a Mystic Sanctuary in University Place. It's a wonderful shop. We're near the corner of 27th and Bridgeport in University Place. And I do classes there. I do readings. I return to Spooked in Seattle on the regular basis every few months to do group readings there. I do gallery readings in both University Place and in Spooked in Seattle, where I just open myself up to the energies of the spirit world. And whoever's deceased relatives from the audience are going to talk to me. I pass those messages on to the audience and I keep going on the line until I run out of time. Mm-hmm. I have one coming up here on the 5th at Spooked in Seattle. You can get tickets through their website. I have another one in university coming up on the 18th with them. And I read at Mystic Sanctuary and I do my work doing my work as a psychic and as a shamanic practitioner and healer and as a conjure man at Mystic Sanctuary every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And they make appointments for those who want to work with me. And all the information on how to get a hold of them is on the website.
Okay.
So if you link my website to the show, they'll be able to see, you know, at Mystic Sanctuary this day and the phone number.
Definitely. Yeah. In the show notes, what we'll do is we'll list your upcoming events and then a link to where people can find you. And so you do the readings. Do you also teach as well?
Yes, actually, me and a friend of mine, her business name is Civil Moon Medicine. We've been doing a series of classes on several different magical topics, and we're getting ready to put together a few others. We put together a psychic fair once every 3 months, actually, called The Whispering Shadows here in Tacoma. And we're about to have the next one on the 4th, so it's this Saturday, here at Mystic Sanctuary. And we call ourselves the anti-psychic fair because we kind of stay away from the new age paradigm that a lot of psychic fairs kind of adopt. You know, you're not going to find somebody here on our psychic fair who's going to tell you that you need to raise your vibration to the 8th level of heaven and become the who you once were, an ancient priest from the ancient lost continent of Atlantis. And no, you're more likely to find a reader or a healer that's going to tell you that you need to stop drinking, you need to stop beating your wife, you need to go get counseling. We promise you, we'll get better.
Yeah.
It's very grounded, very earthy, more low vibration type of issues. We go directly for the type of things that are availing, that are ailing you. So I have all of those things coming up. I teach Reiki classes. I teach classes on folk magic. I teach classes on shamanic healing. I teach classes on all of that. And I do my readings. I do cleansing work at the store. That's one of the few things that I do. I fix candles, you know, I fix and bless candles for people's specific needs. I make mojo bags for them. I do my readings. I do my healing work. I do a lot.
Yeah. So when you do these things though, how do you handle self-care? How do you recharge after doing, especially intensive work? How do you take care of yourself?
Well, one of the things that I actually do is that I joke around with my friends. They know that I have been doing a lot of work when I say that I'm fried chicken because that's how my head feels. It feels like it's a steaming bucket of fried chicken.
Yeah.
After a solid day of doing this work. For those of you not familiar with the metaphor, it's a lot like if you have gone to college and you've been cramming for a final for like a week straight, and you almost feel like there's little stacks of steam coming out of your head. That's what it feels like. So one of the things that I always do after a heavy day of work is eat a very hearty, grounding meal, something that makes me feel very much in touch with my body, something that I would eat at a Thanksgiving dinner, something heavy that brings me back out of the spiritual into the physical. I never do more than 3-4 days of work on the road. It's very rare because it does take a toll on me. I tend to get plenty of rest, and I tend to make sure that I have plenty of snacks in hand when I'm reading, like that I can ground. I can come back to my body in between readings.
Yeah, that's really important, right? I mean, to always be in tune with yourself. If you're going to help others, you have to know how you're feeling to help another person, you know?
Cleansing work is very important for anybody who does my type of work. Mm. And do cleansing work on the general basis for anything that I have picked up from others or has been given to me, protection work. I do a lot of maintenance. I mean, I could do an entire show exclusively on maintenance for conjure practitioners or for people who do my work.
Wow. So I wanted to ask if there was anybody that was really struggling with their own abilities. What kind of advice would you give to them about their self-discovery, their journey from your own experience?
Wow, that's a really good question. Well, above anything else, I would say is that learn boundaries. Learn boundaries not only with yourself, but with the world around you and with the spirit world. A lot of the times we get very excited when we realize that we can read auras and we can talk to the dead or we can be empaths. And we are wide open and constantly in that moment of receiving information, and we're always on. And it's always important to realize that there's a time and a place for everything. The best way I can describe it is once I heard the anthropologist Michael Harner in one of his interviews online speak about when he was with the Jibaro people of the waterfalls of the Amazon basin, when he was beginning his work in anthropology, and he wanted to find one of the shamans of this indigenous group. So he followed people around until he found this one young man who went into the middle of the jungle. And he started telling, well, this plant does this, and that plant does that, and this plant does this, plant does that, and that animal spirit helps you with this, and that animal spirit helps you with that, and that waterfall is where that spirit lives. And he brought him back to the village, and he goes, I found him, I found one of your shamans, he can talk to the spirits. And the village elder looked at him and fell laughing, and he goes, no, he's insane, he's crazy, he's always like that, he never turns it off. There is a very fine line between being spiritual and being insane. And part of that line that needs to be drawn is to be willing to come back to the world of the living. All of the wisdom that you gain as a healer, as a psychic, as a practitioner, whatever it is that your talent is useless unless you are willing to come back to this world and use that gift and use those things you bring back to make it a better place. And you can't do that if you're constantly running away into the spirit world and always being on psychic or healer mode. You have to come back to the heavy, dark, gritty energy of the everyday world, because that's where the difference is made. You will not make a difference for other people's well-being and help other people simply by passing messages and constantly being in the spirit. You have to be down here with us in the trenches, doing the hard work. Otherwise, your gift will be wasted.
Wow. Well, this conversation, I feel like we could go for so long, and I have so many questions and I want to know so much. But unfortunately, I have to wrap up our time together. This has been so, so, so incredible. And I'm so appreciative that you had the time and that you were willing to talk about this with me and my audience. This has been really, really great. So before you go, though, I wanted to, where can people find you? Where are you on social media, and how can people get in touch with you?
I am at Mystic Sanctuary in University Place, near the corner of 27th and Bridgeport, every Wednesday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. the best way for them to make an appointment, we need to get a reading or a healing with me, it's by calling them. Their phone number is 253-302-3563. All of my services are listed on my website, teotoltonali.com, the hard to pronounce Aztec name, as I call it. But I will send you an email with the link, I believe, if I haven't already. And yeah, that's the best place to get a hold of me. I am on Facebook as Teotoltonali, Intuitive Arts.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I hope, you know, maybe in the future that we can have another conversation. If there was any topic that you particularly wanted to talk about, I would love to have you back on again. And like I said, I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much, Roman.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, that was tonight's episode. Thank you so much to Roman for coming on. That was a fantastic conversation. I mean, I feel like I learned so much and I really had such a great time. It was such a great conversation. I really loved Roman's energy. It was a really great, great, great energy, you know, to have a conversation about something, especially something like this. I am going to leave everything in the show notes. So if you want to get a hold of Roman, you have any questions or you're seeking any form of counseling or you have some readings that you would like to be done, please, please, please contact Roman. What an incredible person. What a beautiful energy and personality that this person had. So it was really great. All right, you guys, that's it for me. I will be back, not next week, but the week after that. You know how this rolls. with another guest, and we'll be talking about things. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. So if you want to get a hold of me, social media, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. You can also email me at nocturnalemissionsshow@gmail.com. And I will also be at Crypticon this coming weekend. If you are in the Pacific Northwest and you go to horror conventions, I'll be speaking, I'll be hanging out, and I'll also have some posters for the show. So I'm really looking forward to that. All right, you guys, stay spooky, and I will see you later. Bye.